South Korean President Moon Jae-in agreeing to keep up maximum pressure on North Korea in a phone call with Donald Trump on Monday, after a new wave of UN sanctions over the weekend. But Chinese state media hasn't exactly thrown its weight behind the sanctions or the U.S. The influential Global Times newspaper on Monday slamming Washington for its, quote, moral arrogance, and saying the North Korea situation will never be resolved until the West recognizes that it is part of the problem and not just Pyongyang.
The jury has convicted Martin Shkreli of fraud. Remember, this has been an ongoing legal case. He was accused of looting the drug company that he founded, Retrofin, out of stock and cash to pay back hedge fund managers for the money that he'd taken. He obviously had denied the charges. So there was a number of elements to this case, and he has been found guilty of fraud.
The group of six continues to meet. We put out a notice last week that shows how well coordinated the six of us are. We're now working quite actively with the House Ways and Means Committee and the Finance Committee in the Senate to actually get some muscle structure on the skeleton to really drive tax reform to where we have to drive it. We're going to continuously meet over August and hopefully be able to deliver a comprehensive tax bill early in the fall.
WGN Radio's daily conversation about the life of business and the business of life. This is The Opening Bell with Steve Grzanich on 720 WGN.
Good morning, everyone. Welcome to the program. Today is Monday. It's August 7th, 2017. 5:10 in the morning. Glad you're here with us for the start of another business week and another business day. And another edition of The Opening Bell coming up a little bit later in the program. A manufacturing report for 2017 is coming out, and we will be joined by one of the authors of the report. We'll talk a little bit about the trouble manufacturing firms are having in finding good talent and keeping good talent, and also the artificial intelligence and robot revolution on manufacturing. That'll happen a little bit later in the program. In a minute, we'll bring in our CEO today, the CEO of Solstice in Chicago. But first, on the WGN Associated Bank Market Desk, shares in Asia rose this morning after last week's report of strong gains in U.S. payrolls. On Wall Street Friday, banks, technology companies, and other stocks climbed after the Department of Labor said employers added about 209,000 jobs in July. Investors sold government bonds and bet that interest rates are going to rise, which let banks make more money on loans. The Standard & Poor's 500 Index added as well. The NASDAQ Composite climbed just a bit as well. Benchmark U.S. crude oil this morning slipped to just above $49.50 a barrel. The dollar is flat against the yen and weakened against the euro. Elsewhere on the Asian market list this morning, in addition to the Nikkei being higher this morning by about a half a percent or 103 points, the Hang Seng is right there as well, 127 higher, and the Asian Dow is a little bit higher. In Europe this morning, markets are generally higher, with the FTSE and the CAC higher. The DAX in Germany is a little bit lower. In this country, markets looking for a positive open right now on Wall Street. Dow futures are up about 31 points, and S&P and NASDAQ futures are up single digits. Gold and silver are trading a little bit higher. On the commodities list this morning, most of the grains, corn, wheat, and soybeans are higher, with livestock futures unchanged. Well, the CEO of Solstice in Chicago is Jay Schwan. Solstice is a company that's really at the forefront of digital transformation. The Chicago-based company, a digital innovation and consulting firm that helps companies develop new products, adapt new technology, but it's also doing work in artificial intelligence, robotics, and Internet of Things, and that's why we're happy to have Jay with us this morning. Jay, good morning, and welcome to The Opening Bell.
Thanks, Steve. Great to be here.
It's good to have you, because before we went in the air, we were talking a little bit about how you're right in the hot of it, I like to say, because at Solstice, I mean, you're doing all of the things that are the buzzwords these days, aren't you?
Yeah, we try. Our job is to stay ahead of the trends, so we get to play with stuff pretty early.
Talk to us a little bit about, for the people who aren't aware of what you do and what the company's about, give us a thumbnail of it.
Sure. We're a digital innovation firm, so we're a services business, consulting company, and we work with large organizations to really solve the fundamental problem that digital isn't slowing down. There's these massive changes and disruption that's hitting every business and every sector, and it's our job to help them figure out how to not just withstand it, but to leverage it in a positive way and transform their traditional businesses into digital businesses.
One of the things that jumps off of your website when I was doing a little research for this was the cell line. We believe the future of humanity and technology are inseparable. That's pretty bold statement.
Yeah. Well, I think we already see it, right?
Yeah.
I mean, right now you walk around the streets or you sit on the train and everyone's kind of staring at a glowing rectangle, which in my opinion isn't the best technology interface. Mm-hmm. And we're seeing a lot of improvements coming our way to make that less intrusive. But, we all have a version of our digital self that exists. And the difference between kind of our biology and the digital versions of ourselves are becoming closer and closer together. And I don't think that that's going to slow down.
When you say there's a better way of it, what do you mean by that?
Well, a lot of the technology with the advent of artificial intelligence, not the advent of it, but I guess with the maturing of it, there's a lot of experiences now that we refer to as conversational user experiences that are starting to emerge. And this is really when you're using your voice or natural language to communicate with a computer. So there's not really a user interface. You communicate with the computer the same way you and I are communicating right now. And some of the initial examples of this are things like Apple Siri or Amazon's Alexa. But even in the messaging domain, you're starting to see, what are referred to as bots, where people can kind of chat with a business or a brand. And it's not a human that's answering them. It's a machine. And in many cases, it's indistinguishable.
Yeah, the bot part of that is always the one that gets me. I sometimes you can't tell that you're really having that conversation.
Yeah.
Is that a good direction to go? Or?
Well, as a best practice, it's always good to let the customer know that you are talking to a bot. I think that's that's one of the most important things. But the idea is, generally that if you can use bots to address lower value kind of questions, it could actually create a better user experience and then leave, the humans for more complicated issues or things that require a more consultative or emotional approach. And so that's, with any technology, that's kind of what we see, right? We try to automate those tasks that are repetitive, and computers tend to be better at doing that than humans. And then we leave humans for the higher value things that we're better at.
Do you see that the Alexa and the Siri, that sort of technology, is it going to become more, change more to what we might see, have seen in science fiction movies and things like that, where we're actually in a room and we just say, computer, do this, do that, mm-hmm. where we don't talk to a specific thing. It's just sort of all interact. Is that where you see this going?
Yeah. In fact, that's how I wanted my house to work. My wife will tell you differently. It's not quite there yet. But generally, using our voice as a way to interact with machines and kind of extend our own consciousness or knowledge, It's absolutely the direction. I think if you think about modern movies, the movie Her that came out a few years ago is probably the most indicative of what I think the future is going to look like in the next 3 to 5 years. And in that movie, the main character had kind of a simple earpiece, looked like an Apple AirPod that he would use to kind of communicate with his computer, and it kind of talked back to him, and it was Scarlett Johansson talking back to him, but in a very conversational and natural way.
And I remember that movie sort of infatuated with her. That was probably an understatement, right?
Yeah.
Is that where we're going to, where, we will have these relationships, crazy relationships with our computers?
We'll see. I think with any technology, it introduces risk, and the value that's created has to outweigh the risk that's being introduced. And there's people on opposite sides of the spectrum that are, kind of ensuring that, the lines aren't crossed. Mm-hmm. And so these things tend to govern themselves pretty well. But I do think that, we will see computers playing a more emotional support role for us in the future, more so than they do now.
On the topic of artificial intelligence and how it's gaining and evolving might not be the best term for that, but it's the one I can think of right away. We're hearing, recently Facebook, Mark Zuckerberg and Elon Musk having the conversation. about what the future might hold and what dangers might be there. Mm-hmm. Recently on Facebook, they shut down artificial intelligence that started developing its own language.
Right.
So there is a little bit of danger here. I mean, if you could talk about that, developing their own language part of it.
Yeah, and I know the headline that you're talking about, but it was basically two bots talking to each other, and they think they were negotiating against each other.
They were negotiating a price for something.
Yeah, and they ended up creating their own dialect, and it was interesting watching the stream of that conversation, because they recognized that repetition allowed them to get a leg up, and it started to get kind of creepy. So. But anyway, is there a danger with these technologies? Yeah, I think there's danger with any technology, and AI isn't immune to that. I think there's some heightened awareness around it because there is the potential within our lifetimes where computers could arguably become smarter than humans. And when that happens, it opens up massive opportunities for problems to get solved that we can't currently solve, you know, things like disease and other kind of issues that humanity's faced for a long time. But then it also introduces a risk that, you know, could these things go rogue? And I think it's a matter of not the scientists as much as the engineers, which is what we consider ourselves, you know, applying the technology in a very measured way. And I do believe that there needs to be some level of legislation introduced to kind of govern or put some guardrails around how the technology is used or at least monitored. So I think we'll see a lot of some quick evolution of that over the course of the next few years.
What would a client, if you could talk to us about your clients, maybe not specifically, but and what they come to you for? I mean, what kinds of challenges do they present to you, and what kinds of solutions do you give them?
Sure. Yeah, the customers typically come to us for three different things. One is they want to reimagine their own digital customer experience. And different industries are further ahead than others on this, but you know, as more and more of the conversation and interactions move to the digital channel, a lot of companies, not just consumer-facing companies, but a lot of business-to-business companies have to think about, what is it like to interact with us digitally? What's it like to buy from us? What's it like to be serviced by us? What's it like when I have a problem? What's it like to self-serve? And so a big part of what we do is helping customers reimagine what that overarching journey looks like in the digital domain across all these different channels. So across mobile, across web, across voice, across messaging. So that's a big part of our business and to what we consider table stakes. The second piece is helping companies imagine and create new digital products. So what are new things that they can offer their customers that they couldn't before with the advent of some of these digital technologies, these new channels? And that's very interesting work and involves a lot of connected products in the physical world and new digital self-service capabilities. And then the third is digital operations, and that's really more utilizing things like AI and machine learning to automate how a business operates on the back end.
I would imagine that it's tough, too, to sort of stay on top of all of that. What are the challenges in terms of keeping you, yourself, and your staff ready on all of these different things that you've just talked about?
Yeah, it's a collaborative effort, you know. So we have a headcount of over 450 designers and engineers across the globe. We're all connected. We utilize a great tool called Slack, which I'd recommend for any business, but it's kind of a next generation collaboration tool where you can kind of set up channels of conversation. And so, you know, one example is, you know, we've got channels dedicated to all these different trends where people are posting relevant articles they've read or sharing insights. And so kind of using that collective mind, we're able to kind of stay ahead of what's coming and then formulate our own opinions and then share those with our customers.
And also, I would imagine there's an education aspect to this, too. You want to keep the staff fresh, you probably encourage them to do more education and keep themselves fresh, right?
Yeah, I mean, we're constantly retooling ourselves. That's mm-hmm. kind of the business we're in. So part of it is, you know, those are the type of people we're looking for, people that are encouraged by that. You know, they can't sit still very long. You know, they get bored if they're doing the same thing for too long. So, which is, you know, bad qualities in some roles, great qualities for an innovation company. So there's a lot of retooling that we look to our folks to do, but it's not mandated as much as it's typically organic.
Yeah, and it's funny you mentioned organic because it's one of we saw an article, I think it was in Cranes, where you had your folks set up something with Alexa and Siri where they were getting beer and playing ping pong.
Or... Yeah. two separate things. But yeah, I mean we utilize our own office as a playground for these technologies. So we bought a 25-year-old vending machine. We ripped the guts out of it, connected it. And now we can, you know, we can order beers out of the vending machine via voice or via chat or a number or even via virtual reality. I mean, it's kind of ridiculous. It's not necessarily easier to order beer some of these ways, but you know, it's proving what's possible. And then we actually rethought ping pong. It was a popular game for a lot of tech companies. We wanted to say, what if you overlay digital on top of the ping pong game? So we use Siri Alexa as an announcer for the game. We have sensors that are tracking the points and keeping score, and light shows that are, you know, overlaying ball tracking on the table, which is measured by an Xbox Kinect. And so it actually creates a much more fun and engaging experience. And we're not selling ping pong tables, but for us, when we bring customers and candidates by for potential recruits, you know, it's demonstrating the possible.
And you have Pepper the robot there talking with job recruits too, right?
We do, yeah. So SoftBank, who makes the Pepper robot, is one of our customers. So we do quite a bit of work with Pepper, and we've hired her as our first robotic employee to entertain candidates when they come in for job interviews.
Interesting that you call her an employee. What kind of benefits come with that? Is there a good salary and benefits there?
She gets plugged in every night. our receptionist. Although our receptionist does have a love-hate relationship with Pepper, I think, because they sometimes Pepper will stare down a little bit. I don't know if she's gunning for a job or what.
I would imagine a lot of what you do is having sort of a crystal ball. I wonder if you might talk about what the future of Solstice looks like maybe a year or 2 years from now, maybe even 5 years from now.
Yeah. We have like many businesses, our big, hairy, audacious goal. We plan to be a $1 billion business by 2025. So we're expecting our growth to continue and accelerate. And we're excited that we're on track for that. So that's going to require a level of internationalization and working more closely. We're part of a portfolio of businesses called the St. Ives Group, which is based out of the UK. And there's a number of other really fantastic businesses within the group that we will start collaborating with even more closely and helping us expand on a more global stage. And from a capabilities perspective, we're investing heavily in AI. We think there's going to be a lot of applications of it beyond what we've talked about today that'll help shape businesses. And so that'll continue to be a big investment area for us.
What are the benefits or the negatives of being in Chicago to do some of this?
The benefits far outweigh any negatives. So the benefits for us has been the phenomenal talent pool. So I don't think we would be as successful as we are today if we weren't here. So a combination of the great engineering talent coming in from the Big Ten and these great design schools we have, but really the loyalty that exists within the Chicago workforce and mindset. I think a big issue on the coast is just how flighty folks are and kind of jumping, you know, from company to company, chasing kind of this paper millionaire status. And folks here really look to build a career and value culture. And that has been the biggest proponent of our success. The only downside is you know, just the question marks around our state and what it's going to take to get back on firm footing. But we're continuing to invest heavily here in Chicago. We believe in the future.
Yeah, I bet you've been watching the Foxconn development going into Wisconsin.
Yeah.
Obviously, that's going to have an impact on the Chicago area. How have you been viewing that?
Well, I think it's a positive overall. I think it's a sign of, you know, manufacturing is coming back will be coming back to the States because of automation. And I think that's what we're seeing here. So, where a lot of manufacturing left because of cheaper labor elsewhere, you know, that gets turned upside down when you can automate some of that labor. And so it's not to say there's no jobs. There's obviously going to be thousands of jobs that are created when this factory gets built. But it's because a lot of the lower cost repetitive actions have now been automated, and now they can get the product closer to the consumer, and it drives costs down. So so I do think we'll see I think it's a sign of a significant amount of manufacturing returning, but it's going to be a different type of manufacturing than what we've traditionally thought of. So I think it's a great thing for Wisconsin. I think it'll be a great thing for the surrounding states as well, and for the country. It's a great example of where things are headed.
There have been some dire predictions about what automation and artificial intelligence and robots might do to the job force in 10, 20, 30 years. What do you see happening to it? And do you think we might be headed to a future where there's a basic income for people and the robots are doing most of the jobs?
I think the workforce will change significantly. I do think that we'll probably have some derivation of a universal income strategy within our lifetime. I don't think it'll necessarily be a bad thing. I don't think it means that everybody will make that. I think it's a matter of the cost of living is going to go down significantly. I mean, it's going to decrease faster than we've ever seen it before. So when the cost of living goes down, and then the quality of life goes up. And so I think generally that'll be good for people. But we're going to have to discover new ways to keep ourselves busy, you know, and as humans, we're creative. And I think there'll be no shortage of ways to do that. I just think it's something that needs to be watched closely, governed closely, and not taken lightly. But I do feel like that's probably where we're headed.
That's a positive part of it. Do you think that we will have more thinking going on in terms of thinking of the next big thing when we get to that point?
I do. I mean, I think, you know, I think a lot of the we'll see a huge surge in the liberal arts. You know, and I think that'll become a bigger part of our society than ever. And, you know, when you think about the creative aspect of who we are as humans, and often that's been not subdued, but deprioritized on top of, you know, some of these other things as we think of an industry. I think as more things in industry get automated, then there'll be the ability for some of those creative things to grow and shine through. So, I mean, and this is all further out there stuff, and we could talk for hours on it.
Yeah.
But generally, I'm very positive about the future. I just think but we just have to think of everyone and be empathetic to everybody's situation as we kind of move forward.
Well, Gene, it's good to meet you, and best of luck to you and to everybody at Solstice.
Thanks very much, Steve. Yeah, great to be here.
Jay Schwan is the founder and CEO of Solstice in Chicago. We're going to continue our conversation with Jay after the bell, and we'll post more of it with our podcast a little bit later on this morning on WGNradio.com. You can find more at Solstice Says on Twitter and at solstice.com online.
Now, WGN Radio's daily conversation about the life of business and the business of life. This is The Opening Bell with Steve Grzanich on 720 WGN.
Good morning. Welcome back to the program. It's 5:39. Glad to have you here for our Monday edition. And in our spotlight this morning, we'll turn that now to manufacturing. A manufacturing report for 2017 has been issued by Sikich LLP, a professional services firm that specializes in accounting, advisory, technology, and managed services. We're going to delve into this report a little bit more, talk about manufacturing, some of the challenges and trends, with Jerry Murphy, who's a partner in charge of manufacturing at Sikich. Jerry, good morning. Welcome to The Opening Bell.
Good morning, Steve. Thank you for having me.
It's good having you here with us, because this is a topic that's on a lot of people's minds. We're seeing so many different issues and challenges in this area. What is your report's headline, would you say, for 2017?
I would say that our headline is that there's a number of priorities that our business owners are facing these days. And as the report indicated, I think that probably the largest problem that employers are facing are the workforce skills gap, along with cybersecurity, succession planning, and opportunities for growth are some of the biggest challenges they face today.
The skills gap is one of those big ones that we seem to see daily headlines about. Is it just that is it just that in itself, that the workers that are out there do not have the skills, and it can't be trained or not trained in these areas?
No, I believe that the workers can be trained when someone's identified and found. But I think that many people have think that manufacturing is a dirty, dark, and unsafe place to work. And so there's not a lot of folks who have identified manufacturing as a potential job for them.
The other part of this, too, is that the report shows that a whopping 69% of the firms that you guys have studied plan to add workforce. And I'm guessing the skills set thing is standing in that way, isn't it? Is that why we're not seeing more manufacturing jobs being added?
Yeah, that certainly is the case. With a lot of folks wanting to add people this year, the lack of people that can perform the work or actually even applying for the jobs is limited. So there's a great deal of competition to get employees to come and work for the businesses that we talk to.
We just saw recently the announcement of the Foxconn plant going in Wisconsin. There's some other big companies that have announced plans for advancements. But I saw one story over the weekend in the Washington Post about how there's one plant in Wisconsin that is having so much trouble filling its job needs that it's actually started turning to robots. They've added actually a couple of robots to their assembly line. Is that where we're headed with this? If we can't find the skilled workers necessary, is that going to speed up?
Yes, I believe you're correct. I think that our clients and people that we talk with have identified robots and other automation tools as a way to replace the lack of skilled workforce. You need to consider a long-term investment in those. That equipment typically can be costly, but over the long term, they can be very cost-effective for a long-term return and payback.
Is it something that actually will threaten, at least in what you guys have been able to study, will be able to threaten human workers?
I believe it does. There are studies that indicate that almost 50% of the manufacturing jobs performed today could be replaced by a robot in the next 20 years. But there will be a great deal of requirement for folks to run that equipment, and higher skilled positions will be needed to run those factories in the future.
I want to go through some of the other things, too, here, Jerry. One of the things that I saw was 48% of the companies anticipate organic growth in the existing market. What does that mean, and what could we see from that?
I believe a lot of folks believe that they're going to see increases in their revenue over the next year. And, of course, a lot of folks indicated they're highly optimistic about the economy compared to our prior year study. I think nearly 80% of the respondents indicated they're more optimistic about the economy today than they were in the prior year. I think only 29% indicated that they were optimistic about the economy. So they're really focused on increasing the top line with existing customers, getting a larger wallet share, and trying to improve products to get a larger wallet share and beat their competition.
Is that optimism, that change in their thinking from last year, is that because of the new administration?
You know, no one has indicated directly that it's related to that, but you certainly have to think that everyone was hoping for a big change in taxes in the United States, and of course a lot of that has not yet happened. So many of the businesses I've talked to recently have indicated while they remain very optimistic, they have not seen an increase in their top line and bottom line profits.
One of the other findings from the report is that 34% of the companies plan or anticipate at least some new product or service development. How does that rank in terms of previous years? Is 34% a high number?
No, I don't think it's a high number. I think that that's pretty consistent with what we've seen in the prior years. Developing new products is something that everyone is really working hard at because they realize that they really can't grow without new products and service offerings to existing and new customers.
And the other part of this, too, you mentioned it earlier on, is the cybersecurity threat. 63% of the companies are taking action, conducting IT risk assessments. We saw this in a big way, didn't we, Jerry, recently with Mondelez International. They were caught up in that latest malware incident, and it really affected their supply chain. Is that like a canary in the coal mine for companies?
It really is. I think a lot of small and medium-sized businesses don't believe that this kind of cybersecurity or threat really applies to them. And there's just a lot of malicious activity out there with ransomware and other viruses that are put out there really just to hurt businesses and not necessarily steal their intellectual property or data.
If it can happen to a big company, too, like Mondelez International, it can happen to just about any company, can't it?
Agree. We've seen a number of instances where business owners are telling us that they're seeing phishing schemes or other threats on a pretty regular basis. The key to those instances is really training your employees to know what they're looking for, to be careful about the types of emails that they open and how they respond to those phishing schemes.
And so how are they doing that? Is it are they conducting more testing of their systems? Are they doing more training, or all of the above?
I would say all of the above. There certainly needs to be more training of employees. They oftentimes can be the first line of defense that you have against these kinds of cyber crimes. So we believe that that more training of employees is necessary to prevent big problems in your business. Preparing through risk assessments is another way to identify all of the potential ways that your business is vulnerable to an outside threat.
One of the other findings of the report that jumped out at me, and again, I'm not sure where this number falls in, so maybe you can give us a sense, is whenever we see the economy doing well, we always hear companies talking about mergers and acquisitions. 34% of the companies in your report are considering a sale to a third party as their eventual exit plan. Is that a high number?
Actually, it's probably not a high number, but there's going to be a lot of transition of businesses over the next decade. There's a significant number of the businesses in the United States are owned by baby boomers, and many of those boomers will be selling their businesses or transferring to the next generation. So there's a significant amount of succession that will be taking place in the next 5 to 10 years.
What can those workers who are as back to the being skilled for jobs, what can we do proactively perhaps to get more skilled workers ready for some of these jobs? Let's say somebody's out there now and they're in between jobs or they're looking to move around. Is it going back to school? Is it finding some sort of training?
Absolutely. I think that the key to this is to be proactive and obtain training that the local vocational schools, community colleges, and business associations are offering to be able to tackle the challenges that the businesses face today.
What else would you say jumped off of this report that you want to share with folks, Jerry?
I think that the sheer number of challenges that businesses were facing this year in our report, while workforce challenges really was the highest in our respondents, there certainly were quite a number of issues that businesses were working on, including new markets, new products, supply chain, reducing their supply chain risk, taking out cost. There just were a lot of challenges that people told us they were faced with these days.
And the other thing I saw too, it was that only about a half of manufacturers out there are taking advantage of R&D tax credits. Is that because they're unaware of them, or they just haven't got around to doing it?
I think it's that they believe that they're not eligible for those credits, and it's important to talk to outside professionals to get an understanding of whether or not the activities that you're involved in would qualify for the credit. I think most folks are very surprised to learn that what they're doing actually qualifies for the credit, and credits can be quite significant and help reduce your total tax burden that you can then reinvest that into your business and make yourself more competitive.
Well, Jerry, we appreciate you being with us this morning and sharing some of the insights from the manufacturing report for 2017.
Thank you very much for having me.
Great. We'll have you back. Again, it's the manufacturing report for 2017 from Sikich LLP. Jerry Murphy is a partner in charge of the manufacturing sector there. It's a services, professional services firm specializing in accounting, advisory, technology, managed services, Sikich LLP. And by the way, you can find this report online at Sikich.com.
You're listening to The Opening Bell on 720 WGN.
Good morning. Welcome back to the program. It's 5:53 on the WGN Associated Bank Market Desk this morning. Dow futures are pointing toward a positive open on Wall Street a little bit later on, up 32 points. NASDAQ futures are up 7. S&P futures are up 2. Gold is trading higher. Silver trading higher as well. Let's get the latest now on commodities and agriculture. Good morning, Orion Samuelson.
Good morning, Steve. I want to start the week off on a good note of thanks to the many people, a few thousand of them, that showed up on Saturday night at Hamilton, Illinois, for the Western Illinois Threshermen's Reunion. It celebrated its 50th anniversary this year. It was started by Fred Buckard and the Buckard family 50 years ago, and it's going stronger than ever. And to all of you who joined me for the presentation on stage and told me that you're with us here every morning on WGN, thank you very, very much. And thanks to Dan Sullivan and his wife for providing the ground transportation once Air Orion made it from Huntley, Illinois, down to Keokuk, Iowa, and then we drove across the river. I'll say this, from 4,500 feet north of Interstate 80, a lot of drowned-out areas in the middle of cornfields. South of Interstate 80, looking very green and looking pretty doggone good. So this week, of course, on Thursday, we get the August crop report. That will give us our first real indication of production numbers based on what's happened weather-wise and planted acreage-wise, and it'll be more than projections. That'll be out on Thursday. Also, on the county fair season, the Boone County Fair at Belvedere gets underway on Wednesday, and it'll continue through Sunday. The Winnebago County Fair at Pecatonica underway, and the Illinois State Fair gets underway on Thursday. The Wisconsin State Fair continues through Sunday. Have a great day. I'm Orion Samuelson.
All right. Thanks, Orion. You as well. Here's the WGN Associated Bank Market Desk Outlook for Monday, August the 7th, 2017. It's kind of a light day on the calendar. Federal Reserve will release consumer credit data for June. SoftBank will report financial results. Just a couple of the items on today's list. Looking ahead for the rest of the week, Labor Department has job openings tomorrow and labor turnover for June. The Commerce Department releases wholesale trade inventories for June on Wednesday. On Thursday, the Labor Department has its weekly jobless numbers. Also, the producer price index for July is out. Freddie Mac has mortgages. And on Friday, Labor Department has consumer price index for July. So on Thursday, the producer price, and then on Friday, the consumer price index. One other thing on the calendar today, University of Chicago researchers have been looking at insurance claims of nearly 500,000 people in 130,000 families. They'll release data this morning that has some surprising relationships among some common diseases. That'll be out later in the day from the University of Chicago. Just some of the things that could move the markets on this Monday, August the 7th.